Part 2, Chapter 6. The next morning, Ben woke early and ambled into Tom's room. He found his brother sitting on the side of his bed, looking somewhat groggy. "Did you just wake up?" asked Ben. "Yeah, I had a terrible night. I couldn't sleep." "Neither could I. I guess we were excited about today and being with the professor. Let's see if Lindy is awake." They went to Lindy's room and cautiously opened up the door. Her bed was empty and the covers were in disarray. "I guess she couldn't sleep either," said Tom with a yawn. "Oh." Ben walked to the open closet and picked up Lindy's pajamas from the floor. His eyes scanned the rack of clothes. "Do you know her blue slacks aren't here?" "Neither is her cloak. Her shoes are gone, too." "What did she get dressed for?" Tom scratched his head. "She never dresses till after breakfast." After a thorough search of the house, the boys were more puzzled than ever. Ben said, "You know, I've got a feeling something's wrong." "Maybe she went to the professor's house already," suggested Tom. At 7 in the morning, the boys looked at each other. Suddenly, Ben said, "I think we should call him. What if we wake him up? Then it means Lindy isn't with him or she hasn't reached him. Either way, we ought to check." As Ben dialed the number, Tom said, "Boy, if she's there, I'm really going to tell her off. What a stupid thing to do." The professor's voice came over the phone and Ben spoke hurriedly. "Hello, Professor. This is Ben. I'm sorry to bother you. I hope I didn't wake you. Have you seen Lindy? I mean, is she with you? We can't find her and we thought that..." The professor interrupted. "I know, Ben, I know. I was just about to phone you." Ben detected an anxious quality in the professor's voice. "Lindy isn't with me, but I know where she is. Don't even ask me now. I'll explain when I see you. It's imperative that you come over right away." "What about Ethel? What should I tell her?" "Say that I invited you over for a very early breakfast. Be careful and get out of the house before she realizes Lindy isn't with you. Don't panic now, but hurry." A half hour later, the boys jumped off their bicycles and ran up the steps to the professor's front door. He was waiting for them, his face pale and angry looking. "You got here quickly. Come with me," he said. "Where is Lindy?" Ben asked as they followed him into the house. "She's in Wangdoodle Land." "What? You're kidding." "I'm afraid I am not kidding," the professor said bitterly. He strode up and down the room. "That miserable proc, that cunning, devious demon. Apparently, late last night, Lindy received a visit from a creature called the High Behind Splinter Cat, a devastating animal, seductive and as smooth-talking as you please. She must have had her sympathetic hat with her." "She did," interrupted Tom. "She showed it to us last night." "Yes, well, I only discovered it was missing this morning. She must have forgotten to give it to me, or maybe the proc stole it." "How do you know all this?" asked Ben. "I had a visit from the proc just before you telephoned. That smug devil was so pleased with himself, I could cheerfully have punched him in the nose. The thing that makes me angriest of all is that if I'd had an ounce of sense yesterday, I'd have realized what the proc was up to." "What do you mean?" Tom was puzzled. "Well, the whole journey in the jolly boat, the wonderful afternoon and the fun we had, it was all designed to lull us into a false sense of security. Lindy had such a good time, she completely forgot her fears. By the time the Splinter Cat finished his charming act, Lindy was more than willing to go with him." Now I understand why the Wiffle Bird was trying to tell us. We were being taken for a ride, and I was just too stupid to see that it was all part of the Proc's evil plan. Ben was furious. You know kidnapping is a crime. What are they going to do with Lindy? Tom asked with concern. She must be really scared. I don't think so, said the professor. The Proc informed me that she is happy and will be well taken care of. He will release her when I promise on my honor to give up trying to reach the Wang Doodle. I have until tomorrow morning to give him my decision. Of course, I'll agree to his terms. You mean we have to give up the whole adventure? Ben asked in a horrified voice. I'm afraid so. But why? Cried Tom. Why not just call the Proc's bluff? I'm sure he wouldn't do anything to hurt Lindy. You said yourself that all the creatures in Wang Doodle are peace-loving. Yes, Tom, but I sense that the Proc's getting desperate. Remember, he feels that Wang Doodle Land is in great danger. With so much at stake, he might not harm Lindy, but he could keep her there indefinitely. But there must be something we can do, said Tom desperately. It just turns me inside out to think that the Proc has won and will never get to see the Wang Doodle. Wait a minute, Ben looked up suddenly. You don't have to give the Proc an answer before tomorrow. Right, Professor? That's right. Then why don't we just go and try and rescue Lindy now, while we've still got time? What a great idea, Tom said excitedly. We could sneak in and get her out of Wang Doodle Land before the Proc knew anything about it. He'd never expect us to do something like that. Hold on, said the Professor. I'm not sure that's wise. The Proc could capture us too, and then where would we be? It is a risk, agreed Ben, but we could be extra careful. I bet the Wiffle Bird could help us. Oh, go on, Professor, say we can do it, please, urged Tom. This is the one chance we have to put things right. Then we could still try to see the Wang Doodle if we wanted to. Well, I must say, I do hate to give up the experiment, the professor wavered. We can't give up now. After all our hard work, you know Wang Doodle Land better than anyone. You could take us to find Lindy. I know you could, Professor. Please say yes, Ben pleaded. The professor walked to the French windows and gazed out across the lawn. After what seemed like an eternity, he said quietly, "Very well. We will try it. Perhaps we will be lucky and find Lindy before anyone finds us." He turned to the boys. "I shall phone your house and speak to Ethel. I will tell her that we've planned an excursion." Tom said, "She won't mind that. Mom told her that we'd be spending a lot of time with you." "Oh, good. But on second thought, it might be better to tell her we'll be gone for a few days. That way, if something unexpected happens and we're delayed, she won't worry." "If she thinks we'll be gone a few days, she'll expect us to take some clean clothes," Ben pointed out. "That's using your head," replied the professor. "You'd better go back home and pick up some things. Get something for Lindy, too. I'll have Mrs. Primrose prepare us a good hot breakfast before we leave. It could be the last meal we'll get for a while. Now, let's hurry. Wang Doodle Land is a large country, and we don't know where Lindy is. We haven't a moment to lose." Lindy was beginning to feel anxious. It seemed as if she had been walking for hours. "Dear friend, are you getting weary?" the Splinter Cat asked. "Would you like a ride?" Before Lindy could answer, the cat's tail encircled her waist, lifted her high into the air, and deposited her gently on his back. There. Now, isn't that nice? Much more fun, too. Lindy had to admit that sitting on the splinter cat's back was much better than walking, even though she had a tendency to slide forward since the cat's behind was so much higher than his front. But she soon made herself comfortable by hooking one arm around the cat's tail and tucking one leg under herself. A brilliant sun came up over the horizon, bathing everything in a soft pink glow. The spring-like air carried tantalizing aromas of popcorn and cinnamon toast that wafted past Lindy's nostrils, reminding her she was rather hungry. She knew instinctively the smells were coming from the unusual shrubs and bushes that were so abundant in this area. She made a mental note to tell the professor about it when she saw him. They came to the bottom of a big mountain. "Hold on tight now," said the splinter cat, and he began to climb. Sure-footedly, he moved up the almost vertical face of the rock. "This is where my long back legs become very useful," he said. "They made going up mountains so easy." Lindy shuddered to think of what would happen if she fell off the splinter cat's back. She took a firmer grip on his tail and told herself not to be afraid. They reached a wide plateau. There were boulders and rocks lying as if a giant hand had scattered them about the landscape. There were trees, too, short, scrubby ones that were shiny black like patent leather, and larger ones with generous branches and bright melon yellow leaves in clusters. "Now, are you ready for a surprise?" said the splinter cat, lowering Lindy gently to the ground. She followed the cat into a small grove where he pointed and said proudly, "There it is, home, sweet home." Lindy saw a big lollipop-shaped structure which looked as if it were made of something soft and furry. At a second glance, she saw that it was a tree, which was completely covered with colored yarn, laced and interlaced in such a way that the structure was strong and durable. "Come and see inside," purred the splinter cat. He sprang across the clearing and leaped into the tree, disappearing from view.
"Don't leave me. Please don't leave me," cried Lindy.
"Just a minute. Just a minute." The cat's head appeared through the skeins of wool and grinned at her. Then he withdrew and reappeared higher up, eyes shining mischievously. "I'm sending down some stairs." A rope ladder tumbled out of the tree. It swung invitingly beside her. "Come on up," called the cat. Lindy placed a foot carefully on the first rung and climbed until she found herself in an amazing and ingeniously built room. It was like the inside of a cocoon. The floor, walls, and ceiling were a continuous curve of geometrically woven yarn in rainbow colors. Yellow leaves in the tree pushed through the weaving, and the room looked as if it were sprigged with flowers. The bottom of the cocoon was low slung, like a hammock, and it held a large, luxurious pillow. It was easily as big as a bed, and it was made of silk and satin patchwork squares. It had a beautiful orange tassel at each corner. "Come and sit by me," the Splinter Cat padded into the middle of the bed and settled down. "It's good to be home." He held out a large box of delicious-looking candies. "Have some wadge." Lindy was very hungry. She gratefully took one of the candies. It tasted of marzipan and honey and sweet caraway seeds. "What are these? They're terrific," she said, taking another one. "They are the Wang Doodle's favorite food," grinned the Splinter Cat. "He has a very sweet tooth, you know." Lindy ate 6 more pieces of candy and felt a lot better. "Well, how do you like my pad?" The cat gazed at her and his tail brushed softly across her forehead. She blinked sleepily. Her eyes felt heavy.
I think," she said, yawning, "that it's the loveliest and most beautiful place that I have ever seen."
A great drowsiness overcame her. She lay back and gazed up at the domed ceiling where the patches of persimmon-colored sky showed through the latticework of wool. The sun shone onto the yellow leaves, and they caught the light and sent reflections dancing around the room. A breeze stirred the tree. Lindy felt herself being rocked. She slipped down, down, down into the warmth and luxury of welcome sleep. Chapter 7. The professor and the boys were standing in the middle of the Badlands plain. The waving sea of brightly colored flowers stretched ahead for miles and miles. In the distance, the Wang Doodle's palace sparkled in the early morning sunlight. The professor leaned on his umbrella and said, "Now, this is the way I see it. The proc said the high behind Splinter Cat took Lindy away. What would he do with her? Where would he put her for safety? He wouldn't take her to the palace because the whole point is to keep us away from the palace. My hunch is Lindy is still with the Splinter Cat."
"But how do we find the Splinter Cat?" asked Ben.
"I only know that he lives in the mountains," replied the professor. "But it could be those mountains, or those mountains, or those." He pointed north, east, and west. Ben's heart sank. "Oh, gosh, she could be anywhere. It's going to take ages to find her."
"Perhaps not. Let's use our heads and work this out. The Splinter Cat is probably just like any other mountain cat. He would need a rocky terrain with trees, perhaps a cave or two. Those mountains to the west have a forest, but it looks a bit dense. Too dark and gloomy for a Splinter Cat."
"Those mountains are open and grassy," said Ben, pointing north.
"Right. So I'll bet the Splinter Cat's lair is in the east, somewhere beyond Ploy. Probably in the Gambit region. That's perfect cat territory. Come on, boys. We've got a long way to go."
They walked for what seemed like hours. They grew hot and thirsty, and it was a relief to hear a soft singing sound that told them they were near a stretch of the Golden River. The boys ran to it and drank their fill of the cool, refreshing water. "Can you two swim?" the professor asked suddenly. "It occurs to me that we could reach the mountains faster if we crossed the river." "Let's do it," said Ben enthusiastically. They took off their clothes and rolled them with their shoes into tight bundles. They waded into the water and swam slowly across the river, holding the bundles above their heads. It was a fascinating swim. At every stroke, the water changed its tune, making sweet music. Once on the other side, they dressed hurriedly. Tom looked around. "You know, it's odd that the Whiffle Bird hasn't turned up." "It is odd," agreed the professor. "Of course, she might be watching out for Lindy." "She may not know we're here yet," suggested Ben. "Well, I sort of miss her company," declared Tom. "Even though she's a nuisance sometimes, it's nice having her around." Ben noticed a movement off to his left. He pointed and whispered, "I thought I saw something." They crouched on the ground and remained absolutely still. A group of fierce-looking creatures emerged from a break in the rocks and moved slowly in a line towards the Golden River. There were at least 6 or 7 feet high. They were at least 6 or 7 feet high at the shoulder, with shaggy caramel-colored fur and enormous curling sharp-pointed horns. "What are they?" gasped Thomas. "That is a herd of flummox." The professor's face was alight with excitement. "They're distant relatives of the great aurochs that roamed Europe thousands of years ago. We'd better give them a wide berth. They could be dangerous." When they finally reached the foot of the mountain, they were travel-stained and weary. Tom, trailing a few paces behind the others, noticed something small and shiny laying against a stone. "Professor!" he cried excitedly. The professor whirled in alarm. "Hush, Tom! Look! Look what I found!" The professor examined the shining object. "Why, it's a 25-cent piece. It's the one I gave Lindy. I know it is. She said she would keep it in her pocket as a lucky piece. She must have dropped it, don't you see?" The professor was excited, too. "This proves we're on the right track. Lindy passed this way. What a stroke of light." "Professor, look at this," cried Ben, and he knelt down to look closely at the ground. "It's a paw print, a really large one." "It's the Splinter Cat's, all right," confirmed the professor. He looked up and scanned the mountain towering above them. "See that plateau? I'll bet you anything that that's where he went." "How are we going to get up there?" asked Ben. "There must be a way up somehow. Come on." At that moment, a great shriek rent the air. It was so loud and so close that the professor and the boys practically jumped out of their skins. Terrified, they flung themselves to the ground. Tom found his voice. "What do you suppose it is?" "Whatever it is, it's pretty big," whispered the professor. "Let's be careful." They crawled forward. A faint mist hung just above their heads, and there was a damp feeling to the air. They became aware of a heavy panting sound. Cautiously, They peered around a high wall of rock, and there, standing at the foot of the mountain, enveloped in clouds of steam, was the most remarkable train they had ever seen. It was pure white and gave the impression of being made from thick, fluffy cotton wool. Yet the rods and wheels and couplings and the great engine itself looked strong and shone like polished steel. Written on the side of it in bold letters were the words, "The Brains Train." The professor was staggered. "I expected wonders in this incredible land, but I never thought I'd see anything as wonderful as that." He looked at the mountain. Silver rails went straight up and sheer rock face and disappeared into the clouds. "If I'm not mistaken," he said, "that train goes right to the top." "That, my friends, is how we are going to reach Lindy and the Splinter Cat." "But what makes the train go?" queried Ben. "I don't see an engineer. I don't see anybody." The professor scrutinized the train intently. He mumbled to himself, "Steam, hot, air, brainstorm." His face suddenly brightened. "Got it," he said triumphantly. "That thing is full of hot air. Hot air rises. That's how it goes up the mountain. That's why it doesn't need an engineer." "Well, how does it get down the mountain again?" said Tom. "I have absolutely no idea. But come on, we've got to board that train." They started around the wall, but the professor suddenly grabbed the boys and pulled them back. "Look out," he whispered. "Sidewinders." Three of the horrifying creatures were emerging from the trees. They were deep in conversation. Their trunks waved in the air and their feet crunched the gravel path as they made for the train. The Brains Train gave another shriek and began to puff and blow mightily. Clouds of steam belched out of the engine and rolled towards the professor and the boys. "Let's go," said the professor urgently, and he began to run. Under the protective cover of billowing steam, the boys made a dash for it. The train was beginning to move. Ben was the fastest, and he was the first to gain a foothold on the steps of the moving caboose. He turned in time to see the professor reach out and hook his umbrella onto the railing to pull himself aboard. Tom was in the rear, and to everyone's horror, he suddenly stumbled and fell. The train was gathering speed, and the boy's face took on a look of panic as he saw it pulling away from him. "Come on, Tom, come on," the professor cried. Tom scrambled to his feet and ran as hard as he ever had ran in his whole life. His legs began to ache, and a desperate sob caught in his throat. The professor leaned out as far as he could. He handed one end of his umbrella to Tom. The boy grasped it tightly. The professor yanked hard, and Tom, stumbling and lurching, was hauled aboard the train, where he lay panting and gasping with relief. The professor pulled him to his feet. "Hold on, Tom. We are climbing fast." The boys gripped the railings and gave the professor a weak grin of thanks. The Brains Train heaved and puffed its way up the face of the mountain. Higher and higher it climbed. They were nearing the plateau. Over the noise of the engine, the professor shouted, "It isn't going to stop. We'll have to jump." Suddenly, The train leveled off and began to gather speed at an alarming rate. "Now!" yelled the professor, and the three of them leaped from the speeding train. They hit the earth hard, rolling over and over, tumbling and bouncing. Tom was flung into a bush, and the professor disappeared. Ben staggered to his feet, weaving unsteadily towards his brother. "You okay?" he gasped. Tom nodded. "Where's the professor?" "Here," came a faint reply. "Over the edge." They rushed to the precipice. The professor's umbrella had caught on a root, and he was hanging onto it for dear life and swaying gently out over the void. The boys leaned over and grabbed him. Ben clasped his wrist, and Tom caught hold of his collar. With a mighty heave, they pulled him to safety. He was deathly white and lay for several moments face down in the grass. Presently, he rolled over and gazed up at the sky. Then he looked at the boys. "Thank you both," he said simply. "That was a close call." He sat up and looked at the mountain where high above, the brains train came to a halt. The sidewinders got out. Then a remarkable thing happened. The train slowly vanished before their eyes. "Good Lord!" The professor shook his head in disbelief. "That answers your question, Tom. The brains train doesn't have to get down the mountain. It disappears at the top." "How could it do that?" asked Ben. "Like any hot air that rises, it just dissipates. That accounts for all the clouds up there. I presume the train reassembles itself at the bottom of the mountain, and when it has gathered enough hot air, it moves up once again." "Fantastic!" Tom and Ben helped him to his feet. They could see that the adventure had been quite a strain for their friend. He looked pale and not very steady. But he gazed around with interest and said, brightly enough, "Wow, I wonder where we go from here."